Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
The region where I'm from, there is a big premium on being respectful, on not using inflammatory language or harsh tones.
U.S. House candidate Mary Peltola goes home to Bethel as she waits for tomorrow's election results. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 30th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Juneau police collect DNA samples from people with certain past convictions.
There's a growing risk that the information being collected and used is being used against us or without our consent.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's environment and economy and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help prevent the spread of invasive species by remembering to play clean go, removing all plants, animals, and mud from boots, gear, and vehicles before entering and leaving recreational areas will help stop invasive species in their tracks. Learn more at playcleango.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Alaskans will learn tomorrow whether they've elected former Republican vice presidential nominee and former Governor Sarah Palin to the U.S. House, or Democrat Mary Peltola, who would be the first Alaska Native ever elected to Congress, on her birthday, no less. Limited polling suggests it will be a tight race, but for now, Palin, as Alaska's famous far-right icon, is trailing Peltola, the lesser-known progressive candidate. On the eve of the final vote tally, Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this profile from Peltola's hometown of Bethel.
Mary Peltola can't wait to get on the river. The wind and rain have let up. The tide is favorable. She's throwing things into her open aluminum boat. Buckets, an anchor, waterproof gloves.
Everybody has a float coat?
By float coat, you mean life jacket?
Yeah.
Bethel is a town of 6,000 on the Kuskokwim Delta, upriver from the Bering Sea. Most people here are indigenous, Yupik, like Peltola. She's pulled salmon from this river since she was a child. But for this fishing trip, she has a camera crew with her. Because whatever the outcome of the special election, Peltola will also be on the ballot in November. She needs footage of her fishing for TV ads. It's cumbersome.
I want to put this inside here just to have a mic on. It'll be like in here, but we don't have to hide under that
right
jacket.
Right this minute?
Well, we can do it.
Okay, thank you.
There's a more serious problem with this fishing trip. There are no fish. It's a tragedy beyond words for this region. Protecting salmon is a major campaign theme. Mary Peltola is 48. She's the daughter of a Yupik mom and a dad from Nebraska who went north to teach school. As she drives her skiff through the braided Kuskokwim, she points out the bank where her great-grandparents lived and on the other side where her mother was born.
Yeah, this is kind of the center of my universe, just because my uncles taught me exactly where to put the net to get certain kinds of fish.
Scientists suspect climate change as a reason why the salmon aren't returning to this river. Some tributaries are open to fishing, so mostly for the camera, Peltola feeds a small curtain of net into the water. She reels it back in, empty.
I stay hopeful right until the end, because sometimes you get lucky right on the very end meshes.
At age 24, Peltola ran for state house and beat an incumbent. She stayed in office a decade, overlapping with then-Governor Sarah Palin. They bonded in the state capitol as two pregnant moms in office. Palin didn't respond to interview requests. She vilifies Democrats in general, but recently called Peltola a sweetheart. Peltola isn't bad-mouthing Palin either.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I've seen the photos.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think she's great.
In the legislature, Peltola was known for uncommon kindness.
She was never bitter. She was never angry. She was never partisan.
Andrew Halcrow and Peltola were freshman legislators in 1999. The Anchorage Republican ignited fury with a speech that he now regrets, saying Bush residents were like children who don't learn to tie their laces because the state keeps sending Velcro shoes. A lot of Alaskans wrote Halcrow off as a racist. But within hours, he says, Peltola was at his office door asking if she could offer a different perspective on the rural energy subsidy he derided. Halcrow became an ally.
I think with Mary Peltola, you should never, ever misconstrue kindness for somebody who's not going to stand up for what she believes in.
Peltola says yelling isn't productive and not her style.
The region where I'm from, there is a big premium on being respectful, on not using inflammatory language or harsh tones.
Peltola says she once defused an urban Republican legislator just by pointing out that he, decades her senior, had a longer tenure in Alaska than she did. They got on well after that. To her, that's effective politics. Reporting from Bethel, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And a quick note, if you want to watch, the Alaska Division of Elections says it plans to live stream the final vote tabulation tomorrow, starting at 4 p.m. An Anchorage man arrested on manslaughter charges in the beating death of his father, a former state legislator, has now been indicted for murder. Anchorage police arrested 36-year-old Talon Westlake on August 20th and charged him with manslaughter, which is an accusation that he recklessly caused the death of his father, 62-year-old Dean Westlake, who served in the state house representing Northwest Alaska in 2017. But on Monday, an Anchorage grand jury indicted Talon Westlake on charges of first-degree murder, that is, for allegedly acting with intent in killing his father, and second-degree murder under the alternate theory that he showed extreme indifference to his father's life. Assistant District Attorney Trina Sears says she can't discuss what specific new evidence came to light.
Even when somebody's arrested, the investigation continues in the case. It doesn't stop. And so, you know, in this case, you know, between gathering evidence, medical evidence, police investigation just continued and we got more information.
According to the initial charges, Dean had planned to evict Talon from an apartment Dean's girlfriend owns. A neighbor heard them arguing hours before Talon called police to say Dean wasn't breathing, and officers found Dean dead with blood on the floor and walls looking like he'd been pummeled, the manslaughter charges say. Sears, the prosecutor, says grand jurors heard additional evidence gathered after Talon's arrest when they indicted him on Monday. Talon Westlake remains jailed on $50,000 cash bail. His court-appointed attorney declined today to comment on the indictment. Dean Westlake served as a Democratic representative for House District 40 from January to December 2017 when he resigned amid accusations of sexual harassment. As part of the state's effort to reduce a backlog of 20,000 missing DNA samples used for evidence, Juneau police can now ask some people for a cheek swab during traffic stops and other interactions. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has the story.
If you get pulled over in Juneau and the police run your ID and see that you have a record, they could ask for a DNA sample.
And they do a cheek swab is typically how that's done.
That's Lieutenant Craig Campbell from the Juneau Police Department.
We try to minimize any interruption in the person's day, and we can collect that very quickly and let the person go on about their business.
Governor Mike Dunleavy announced the state's plan to collect, quote, owed DNA late last year.
We're tackling a 25-year-old problem that dates back a quarter of a century.
The state says that missing evidence makes it harder to solve violent crimes like sexual assaults. Dunleavy's announcement came after the Anchorage Daily News reported that many police departments across Alaska were not collecting the required DNA samples for arrests for certain crimes. Some didn't even know they should have been collecting the evidence at all. Austin McDaniel is a spokesperson from the state's Department of Public Safety. He says that DNA requirements are based on a decades-old law.
Yeah, the initial statute was passed in 1995, and it's been updated 8 times since it was initially passed.
At first, the statute required police to collect samples from anyone convicted of a crime against a person. And now, police are supposed to collect samples after arrests, not just convictions, for all felonies and even some misdemeanors. That's caused the ACLU of Alaska to raise privacy concerns.
Our DNA can reveal some of the most personal and private information that we have.
Megan Edge is the communications director for the ACLU.
And as states and Alaska expands their collection of DNA evidence, you know, there's a growing risk that the information being collected and used is being used against us or without our consent.
She also said that DNA should be obtained, quote, in the least obtrusive means possible. McDaniel, from the Public Safety Department, explains how the collection process works. He says they flagged people around the state who they want to collect DNA from. These could come up through a records check during any kind of contact with police, including traffic stops.
So that way, if that individual was to have contact with law enforcement for any other purpose, they would alert that law enforcement officer that person did lawfully owe DNA, and that officer would need to work to collect that DNA at that time.
Lieutenant Campbell from the Juneau Police Department says that giving a sample is mandatory for people who've been convicted of qualifying offenses.
And if you do decline, there's a chance that you could get criminal charges.
Campbell says that at this time, Juneau Police are only using the state's flagged files to know if someone owes DNA. But McDaniel says state troopers are working more proactively to collect samples. Megan Edge says the ACLU of Alaska is monitoring the issue, and that people can reach out to them if they have concerns. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Quimry.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, childhood vaccinations for things like polio and measles are on the decline in Alaska.
Vaccines are one of the simplest, easiest tools that we have to keep ourselves healthy and safe.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. Their members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
Fewer Alaska children are getting common vaccinations for debilitating and wildly contagious illnesses like polio, which decades ago used to infect and paralyze kids before vaccines wiped it out in the U.S. State health data show that from 2013 to 2021, the number of children in Alaska who completed the childhood series of vaccinations decreased from about 60% to about 46%, with a steeper drop-off starting in 2020, coinciding with the COVID-19 pandemic. Alaska Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink says that concerns her. And while Zink says she thinks the pandemic is a factor, she doesn't point directly to some Americans' distrust of COVID vaccines as an explanation for the declining rates of other vaccinations.
Many people are trying to answer that question from numerous angles, particularly in the national data that I've seen. The reason that people choose to not get vaccinated are multifactorial, and there's not a single reason. The role that COVID-19 has played or concerns about the vaccine is a component for some people. But what I think is really interesting from some recent data that I saw is the single biggest reason people had not gotten their children vaccinated was just convenience and time. I hadn't gotten into the appointment yet. I hadn't been able to just ask my doctor a couple questions. And so I think there's a lot more that we can do for convenience and just making this easy. And then making sure we're answering questions. It may be about, do they really need it? What are the side effects of it? Concerned about needles. And I just encourage people to be open and honest with their provider about what their questions are. But I think it's important to remember that vaccines are probably the safest thing that we do in medicine. And they're safer than most over-the-counter medications. I have much more concern about, you know, people taking ibuprofen daily than vaccination. You know, in Alaska, we winterize. We get ready for the winter as it comes. And as we winterize, we should be also considering immunizing. So winterize and immunize. Make sure that you're getting your booster shot. So this year will be flu. We'll be having a COVID booster that will be bivalent, meaning that it is being able to address Omicron as well as kind of the old variant as well. So it's I don't want to say new and improved, but it's updated based on the current variants that we're seeing. So it's a multiple variant vaccine. So we'll be having that really at the beginning of September, and then making sure that your kids are vaccinated prior to going to school and getting caught up in the vaccine series. So just like we take care of our normal health, we change out our tires and we winterize our houses and we pull out the snow jackets. There's things that we need to do to get ready for school and get ready for the winter. And part of that is teaching your immune system about these viruses so that they can be prepared.
I have to ask,
Are you worried about what might happen if that trend continues with fewer people getting childhood vaccines?
Oh, yeah, I definitely am. I'm concerned about that. I mean, a couple of different reasons. First of all, as a clinician, it is heartbreaking to see something that was potentially preventable impact people. And that can be everything from a car accident where someone wasn't seatbelted, or seeing someone get really sick from an infection that could have been minimized if they had been vaccinated prior to that. It's just, it feels like a failure as a public health leader if we did not do more to encourage people to take those preventative measures early on. Two, it's so much easier to slow things down early than it is later. And so we have an opportunity as a state right now to increase our vaccine rates so that we aren't seeing our first case of polio in the state, or we aren't having a measles outbreak or mumps outbreak in the state, or transferring more kids from, you know, a village because of bad pertussis. Our healthcare capacity right now is really full. I mean, our hospitals are incredibly full right now just because there's a lot of people out doing a lot of different things. It's not because of any one factor, but we have limited healthcare capacity in this state, and we all play a major role in keeping ourselves healthy and well and our communities healthy and well. And we have tools, and vaccines are one of the simplest, easiest tools that we have to keep ourselves healthy and safe. I mean, diseases like polio, the majority of cases are asymptomatic. And so it spreads person to person asymptomatically until someone ends up paralyzed. So before we get to that point, we really need to do what we can to try to increase those rates to protect each other. And I think Alaskans are, I mean, I think it's part of what I love working up here is people check on each other when you have a flat tire, neighbors bring you food. We work with each other as a community, and we're also good at being tough and caring for ourselves. And so I would just encourage Alaskans to take care of themselves and their community by making sure that they're vaccinated and their loved ones are as well.
That was Alaska's Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ann Zink. The union representing over 1,000 University of Alaska faculty has filed an unfair labor practices complaint against the university's administration. United Academics and the university have been in contract negotiations for a year, and the union's president, University of Alaska Fairbanks Professor Abel Bolt-Ito, says the administration acted illegally this spring when it unilaterally declared an impasse and imposed a new contract despite ongoing federally mediated negotiations.
We're still hoping to get a joint contract with the university, and we will continue to bargain in good faith. And hopefully the UOP filing will be an incentive for the university to finally be reasonable.
Negotiation of a 3-year collective bargaining agreement has continued this summer, and Bolt-Ito says salary increases have been agreed upon except for one issue.
The university proposed in their last formal proposal to give us a 3% raise in the first year, a 2.75% raise in the second year, and a 2.5% raise in the third year. And we have agreed to that, but we want to include a Me Too clause so that if they give other employees higher raises, we will get them too.
Bolt-Ito says other contract items still on the table include academic freedom and tenure issues, and whether two faculty groups are included in 3 main articles of the collective bargaining agreement.
They want to exclude postdocs and visiting faculty and treat them as second-class citizens.
When asked for comment on the unfair labor practices complaint, University of Alaska spokesperson Robbie Graham says it is under review, adding that, quote, the university firmly believes that it has been bargaining in good faith from the earliest days of negotiations and will continue to do so. She goes on to say that, quote, our public statements have been factual, providing appropriate transparency about the negotiations to the university community. The university will respond to UNAC's filing and remains committed to the mediation process with the expectation of finding common ground with the faculty union on the remaining issues, end quote. Embattled Ketchikan City Council candidate Dave Timmerman has officially ended his campaign and is asking residents not to vote for him. That's after KRBD Radio published an investigation into his criminal history. Ketchikan City Clerk Kim Stanker said in an email today that Timmerman filed a formal request late Monday afternoon to withdraw from the race, but because he filed this request after the ballot was finalized on August 25th, Timmerman's name will appear on the October 4th ballot. If Timmerman gets the most votes in the three-candidate field, Stanker said he could still be seated on the council. Timmerman did not immediately return a phone call seeking comment. Court records show Timmerman was convicted in 2018 of violating a restraining order that stemmed from his relationship with an 18-year-old woman while he was 46. He also pleaded guilty to assault after police accused him of trying to intimidate a witness in a separate case involving his mother-in-law. Timmerman apologized in a Facebook post Monday evening and asked residents not to vote for him. Timmerman said he is looking at moving out of town at the end of the summer tourism season.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Everyone knows eating fruits and veggies promotes a long and healthy life. It's important to make every bite count. Alaskans are lucky to have greens and berries from the land, as well as fresh, frozen, and canned. When it comes to living a long and healthy life, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by USDA SNAP Ed.
Hundreds of members of the Kodiak community celebrated the life of 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola this weekend. Sipola went missing in early May near his home in the Menashka Bay Road area of Kodiak. His body was found more than a week later above town on Pillar Mountain. KMXD's Kirsten Dobroth reports the event was part of a fundraiser for the library.
More than 200 people, including kids, members of local law enforcement, and even a few dogs, gathered at the Kodiak Public Library on Saturday morning for the Run, Learn, and Play 6K Run and 1 Mile Walk. It was the first morning it wasn't raining in more than a week, and just as slivers of blue sky opened up overhead, a wave of runners and walkers took off toward East Addition Park, just a few miles away. Amy Williams was the event's organizer. She also helped coordinate the search for 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola back in May, when he wandered away from his Kodiak home.
Family wanted to do something to celebrate Sawyer, and Sawyer loved to run, so this was the perfect event for that, and you can hear there's a lot of excitement.
Sipola had autism. He was missing for more than a week before his body was discovered by people recreating on Pillar Mountain. According to the Alaska State Troopers, he died of hypothermia. More than 2,500 members of the community helped search for Sipola during the week he was missing, along with canine teams from across the state, members of the Coast Guard and Navy SEALs. Local pilots also assisted in the search, which covered 10,000 acres across the island. Williams says many of the participants at Saturday's walk and run had been part of the search effort, too.
We have great support from the Alaska State Troopers, and which were integral in the part of the search, and so amazing to have them show up and spend time with us this morning.
A GoFundMe page was set up as part of Saturday's run and walk. Money raised will go towards programming at the Kodiak Public Library for kids with sensory disorders. William says the Sipola family will work with the library on what that will ultimately look like. As runners streamed across the finish on Saturday, she said she wasn't surprised by the turnout.
Kodiak is a really special place, and the kind of community support is just amazing.
She says there's already plans to make the Run, Learn, and Play 6K Run and 1 Mile Walk an annual event. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A well-known Metlakatla carver, known for his poles in Metlakatla and at Ketchikan's Rainforest Sanctuary, died unexpectedly last week. Friends and family of Wayne Hewson remember him as a mentor, a culture bearer, and a fixture of life in Metlakatla. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
When things were good, they were groovy. And when something was cool, it was far out. That's according to Wayne Hewson's friends and family, who chuckle, remembering his favorite 70s slang that he held on to over the years. The 69-year-old father of two was a respected carver who lived in Metlakatla with his wife, Tony, and two sons, David and Daniel. He was in a rock and roll band in high school, and later a longtime member of the fourth generation dance group.
He was a really open and kind man. He was soft-spoken. He was really dedicated to his family.
That's David A. Boxley, a Tsimshian master artist and close friend and mentor of Husin. Boxley worked on 6 poles with Husin, including Husin's first pole, raised in 1994 at Metlakatla Senior Center. He remembers Husin as humble, talented, and proud of the cultural revival work he did through the fourth generation group.
People don't realize how much of an effect they have on their families and their friends and just the world around them, their immediate world. I think that was the kind of guy he was.
He was also an inspiration for Boxley's son, David R. Boxley.
To me, he was Uncle Wayne.
The younger Boxley remembers how Husin loved to play music. He was well known for his affinity for rock and roll. His instruments of choice were the drums and guitar.
But also, you know, it would surprise you and pick up a guitar and just play some beautiful picked, you know, song, just something really pretty, and he had a beautiful singing voice.
He says Husin was a man devoted to his family.
Boy, he loved his wife, and they were very close. She was with him on a lot of his pole projects, helped him paint, and they were together, I think, 45 years. And real love story, those two.
William Bolton met Husin through the fourth generation group. Chuckling, he joked that he always thought Husin was a little odd.
Odd in the way, I guess, that he was friendly and he didn't tease like most people do here in Metlakatla.
Bolton worked with Husin on a few projects over the years. He remembers Husin as a mentor who was always generous with his time and expertise.
I think the biggest thing is that he was always willing to give people advice, and he never did it in a way that could be taken as mean or attacking anybody. Just that he was willing to share his knowledge that he had and didn't judge anybody for not knowing something.
In the days since Husin's death, Bolton says he's been reflecting on what the man taught him about carving.
And he showed me that other carvers aren't my competition. That, you know, you could always learn something from somebody.
Clifton Guthrie says that Husin was someone he looked up to growing up in Metlakatla. Guthrie says if it wasn't for Husin, he might never have completed his first solo pole. He recalls how Husin calmed his nerves ahead of the pole raising.
As a carver, I was worried about, like, the whole, you're having guys lift it, carry it, raise it with ropes, and he's the one in charge. And he made, you know, he made a point to put his hand on my shoulder and say, your job is done now.
He says Husin oversaw the whole event and attended the celebration held afterward. Guthrie decided that as payment, he would give Husin fresh deer and fish whenever he had it. Guthrie says he's keeping up that deal with Husin's wife, Toni. Most of all, Guthrie remembers Husin as a generous man who always made time for those close to him.
He made me feel like we had been friends forever.
A viewing was held in Ketchikan on Monday. A public celebration of life is set for September 5th in Metlakatla. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. And wherever you get your podcasts, we're also on Spotify, so you can find us there. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Bethel, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, and Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking 45 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.